Before we do that, we're going to think not of theology, not of the Bible, but of films. You like films, don't you? I like films. Because it's so important, and I know you know this already, but to see those little details that directors add to films very deliberately, very carefully, for the observant viewer to enhance the film viewing experience. Here's a little example. That great Christopher Nolan trilogy of The Dark Knight starring... there we go, all about Batman. You'll perhaps have seen that Bruce Wayne, the alter ego of Batman, drives around in his millionaire clothing and lifestyle. He drives a Lamborghini, but in particular, it's a Lamborghini Murcielago. And for those who speak Spanish, you can tell me that Murcielago in English means bat. He is the Batman. Sometimes those details add a little bit of entertainment to what's going on if we spot them. In the first Harry Potter film, the Philosopher's Stone, Neville Longbottom receives what's called a remembrall, something which turns red when the person holding it has forgotten something. We're not told what it is that Neville has forgotten, but as the camera pans back, we see that he alone is the only student not wearing his school robes. Final little detail that's good to see that adds meaning and depth to a story comes in Star Wars Episode 3, The Revenge of the Sith. Anakin Skywalker, that young Jedi Knight being trained by the veteran Obi-Wan Kenobi, but is losing the way. Kenobi, this powerful Jedi, just can't seem to hold on to Anakin. Anakin is moving away toward the dark side, and as they have their final conversation, as the two characters stand and talk for the last time, Obi-Wan Kenobi stands in the light and, prefiguring what he will become, Anakin stands already in the darkness. Who does Anakin become? Darth Vader, very good. See, the little details are very deliberate. Filmmakers go to great lengths to make sure that they're there, and they make all the difference if we can see them and understand them. As Joel and Rebecca have spoken of their faith in Jesus, there's no doubt, is there, that it's that person, Jesus Christ, and that event 2,000 years ago, his death on the cross and his resurrection 3 days later, it's him and those events which stand at the heart of the Christian faith. Even today, Christians around the world wear crosses on their necklaces. They decorate their buildings. If we had a building, we might do the same, but we meet in a school, so it's just not possible. But they decorate their buildings with crosses. Some denominations even build their church buildings in the shape of a cross. Jesus and his cross stand at the heart of the Christian faith. But understanding why lies in the little details, which is easy to miss. And it's those little details which will enhance our understanding of who Jesus is and why it is he died. And it's the reason for his death that gives meaning to what Rebecca and Joel have spoken of this morning. Just on the screen behind me, you'll see a little of Mark's gospel. Here's an account of the crucifixion from the gospel according to Mark. It was 9 in the morning when they crucified Jesus. The written notice of the charge against him read, "The King of the Jews." At noon, darkness came over the whole land until 3 in the afternoon. And at 3 in the afternoon, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, this is in Aramaic, his mother tongue, "Eloi, Eloi, lema sabachthani." And Mark even gives us a translation, which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" And then we're told, verse 37, with a loud cry, Jesus breathed his last. And the curtain of the temple, that's the temple back in Jerusalem, was torn in two from top to bottom. And when the centurion who stood there in front of Jesus saw how he died, he said, "Surely this man was the Son of God." For just little details, which are important for us to see, and help us understand the significance of what's going on. The first occurred right at the beginning of that record, and it was this strange darkness. Jesus is lifted onto the cross at 9 in the morning, and at midday, at 12 we're told, darkness descends on the land until 3 p.m. in the afternoon, at which point Jesus takes his last breath and he dies. 3 hours then of, in the middle of the day, this rather unexpected, rather ominous darkness. And we know it's not fiction because contemporary historians amongst the Greeks recorded this unusual astronomical event. Phlegon and Thales noted the event in their records of the period. Throughout the Bible, darkness symbolizes God's displeasure at humanity's rebellion against him. We're told that God made us to love us, but we don't embrace our Creator in love. We hold him at arm's length in fear and in hatred. The Bible gives that a special word. It calls that sin. And now as Jesus is dying on the cross, darkness descends. But it isn't God's judgment against sin in the whole world that's on display. Now, God's judgment towards sin, can you see, is directed to one person in particular. Which brings us to the second detail, this terrible cry. We know who this anger is directed towards because the darkness lifts as Jesus dies. God's judgment against sin is directed at Jesus. And that's confirmed by this cry that Jesus makes. My God, why have you forsaken me? To be judged by God means to be separated from all that's good in God. It's the very thing that Jesus expresses on the cross. He, God the Son, is forsaken by God the Father as he is punished for sin. But you say that's not fair. What did Jesus do to deserve such punishment from the Father? And the answer is nothing. Not one thing. The Bible tells us, in fact, that Jesus, the Son of God, lived a perfect life. He loved God and he loved the people around him. Without ceasing, without faltering, without fail, Jesus is perfect. So it wasn't for his sin that he was being punished. I wonder if you've watched those Fast and Furious films. They're up to about 8 or 9 now. They're a little guilty pleasure of mine just occasionally. Me and the boys will watch them. I'm not sure just how fast or furious they might become. One of the central characters is played by Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and he gets in more and more ridiculous flips and spills and crashes and smashes, launching cars into the air, jumping from buildings, falling from helicopters, except... And here's another movie detail for free. He doesn't do any of it. If it can't be done on a computer, it's done instead by his cousin, Tenoya Reid, who substitutes for Dwayne as his stunt double. When the stakes are high, The Rock steps back and Tenoya takes his place. Why was Jesus punished by God the Father on the cross? Well, it wasn't for the wrong he had done. But the Bible tells us he stood as a substitute, taking the place of his people, taking the divine judgment they deserve, so that they might be forgiven. Which leads us to the third detail, the third of four, and it's that torn curtain in the temple in Jerusalem. And it's so important because it explains what Jesus' death achieved. There's a wonderful moment in Mark's gospel where Mark almost acts as if he's a clever, gifted film director. Let me take you through it. First of all, he points the camera at Jesus on the cross. At verse 37, with a loud cry, Mark writes, Jesus breathed his last. But then he cuts the scene and he whizzes the camera well away from the crucifixion back to the temple in Jerusalem where we read verse 38. The curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. And then cut, the scene ends almost as soon as it's begun, and we whiz back to the foot of the cross. And when the centurion who stood there in front of Jesus saw how he died, and so on. The camera points at Jesus, then we whiz to the temple in Jerusalem, then cut, and the director takes us back to the cross. Why this inserted shot of the curtain in the temple? Well, if you know your Bible, you'll perhaps know the answer. In the Old Testament, the curtain in the temple represented this great barrier between God and humanity. God was perfect, and we were not. And so we could not enter his presence. The curtain in the Old Testament stood as like a great no entry sign. But now Jesus has died for the sin of his people. The barrier has gone. There's no judgment now standing between God and his people. And so the symbol of that separation, the temple in the curtain in the temple, it is ripped in two by divine hands from top to bottom. By being our substitute. By facing God's judgment for us in our place. Jesus made the way open to God for people like you and for me. For people like Rebecca and Joel. Which brings us to the final detail, and it's that shocking statement. A strange darkness, a terrible cry, a torn curtain, and finally this shocking statement. That the whole event in Mark's Gospel, it's like an invitation given to the world. Sin and judgment are dealt with, forgiveness is on offer for everyone and anyone, God says. Jesus has died the death that you and I deserve so that now we can go freely to our Creator. But it's an invitation that needs a response. It's a gift which needs to be received. It's an offer which needs to be embraced. And what's fascinating in Mark's Gospel is that the one person who does so is not a family member of Jesus, not even a disciple of Jesus, but one of the very soldiers who has just put Jesus to death. It's a Roman soldier, a centurion in fact, who finally sees what the cross of Christ is all about and proclaims his faith in his own way, a little bit like Rebecca and Joel have done this morning. A final little important detail is this shocking statement, verse 39, and when the centurion who stood there in front of Jesus saw how he died, he said, "Surely this man was the Son of God." So look, the next time you're at the cinema, look carefully for those little details. Nothing's there by accident, almost nothing. The filmmakers include very deliberately things to enhance your viewing. And the next time you see a cross hanging around someone's neck on a chain, think about these four little details. The darkness, the cry, the curtain, and the shocking statement. Those four little details make all the difference. Rebecca and Joel have professed to us this morning that they trust in Jesus and his death on the cross for their salvation. That's why we happily baptize them. That's why we celebrate, and we will celebrate later with a great church lunch. That's why we rejoice. Those little details come together and point to Jesus as the source of our salvation. And this morning, Rebecca and Joel have embraced him.